American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
And welcome, everybody, to another episode of Pulse of Fins Nation. I am your host, Louis Sung. I am joined by Ron Caniff. I am joined by Chris Early, otherwise known as Duke. I am joined by Eric Weidecke. Gentlemen, we have a lot to talk about today. How are we doing today?
Doing well.
Good.
Doing well.
Doing great. Awesome. I mean, it's almost, what are we, less than 3 weeks away from the season starting? What are we, like 18 days? Do I have that right? 19 days? I think
something like that. Something like that. And for those of you who are listening on after the fact and on the 3 yards per carry podcast scene when this does go up, yes, Ron is actually deeper than he was last week. Whatever he tried to fix, it made it worse.
I don't know. I didn't go back and listen to the show. I don't sound deeper in here. So something in the settings when I was doing that other podcast where I had to do a mix minus and record only myself. Was it? Because I have a different. I mean, I just use an interface. Not that anybody cares, but I have like a $50 interface that just pushes my sound out, allows me to use this XLR mic, right, and then pushes it out so we can do this live show. But I used to, back in the day, use a recorder, and I used to use this mixer, none of which I use when I'm on this show. That's just because I used to record it like analog, and then I would just bring you in, Louis, through my phone, right? And all that stuff. So then I had to use everything for this podcast. And I had to mess with 1,000 settings. And somewhere in one of these damn settings, I accidentally pushed Darth Vader. And I can't find the Darth Vader button to turn it off. I don't know, man. I just have to be Barry White for a while.
My father finds it very amusing, at least.
No, I am your father.
Nice. No, I'm your father.
I mean, that's not even the quote, right? Like people think that's the quote, but
in I am your father. That's one of those. What do they call it?
Mandela
effect.
Yeah. People think that he said it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I guess it's an excuse to go back and watch it again. Anyway, we got a lot of stuff to talk about here, folks. Obviously, Tua Tagovailoa came out in an interview with Dan Le Batard talking about his experience with Brian Flores. So very interesting to get a real candid expression of how everything went down during that time period. So we'll talk briefly about that. And, of course, we'll talk about the aftermath of everything that happened in the Washington Commanders game. But we do have a sponsor we have to talk about, jerseys305.com. I'm going to play the video for you guys so you can check out and see what they've got.
Hey, it's Ethan Skolnick for the 5 Reasons Sports Network. We've got a great new sponsor that fits with us perfectly. It's called jerseys305.com. That's jerseys305.com. This is your home for dead stock and vintage jerseys from the Heat, Panthers, Dolphins, Marlins, and the other local teams. Their mission was born from a passion for wearing jerseys of the old styles and the past players. Jerseys 305 aims to make every fan stand out from the crowd with unique pieces that you don't commonly see anymore. Maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, but not today. And Jerseys 305 was created by the fans, for the fans. They're diehards just like you. In fact, they're probably listening to this episode right now. So check them out. Jerseys 305, their partnership with 5 Reasons Sports, celebrating with a 10% discount on the next purchase using the code 5 at checkout. Unlock your exclusive savings on the entire vintage collection.
And again, that's jerseys305.com. Go there, buy your vintage jersey or your memorabilia, whatever it is they've got in their website. Use the promo code 5. You'll get 10% off your next order. All right, so we'll get the Tua stuff out of the way first because I want to be able to set off by talking about the next game that we've got coming up. So we'll get this going first. So once again, Dan Le Batard had a sit-down interview with Tua Tagovailoa, and the things that he had to say is, quite frankly, I never thought we'd ever hear it publicly speaking. A lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people have different opinions on it. I know that the folks at ESPN, they also touched on it. There was a very amusing moment where I can't remember the guy's name, Dominique Foxworth, I think, accidentally said something, and Jeff Darlington had this look of, I can't believe you just said that on live TV kind of thing, because I think maybe he revealed a little bit more than he was supposed to. But a lot of people are talking about what Tua said, and in a nutshell, I'll just break it down for you guys. Tua essentially said that Brian Flores treated him like crap. Like, there's no more beating around the bush about it, no more niceties, no more pretending like everything was wonderful and, oh, you know, we just had our differences. And no, Tua came out and said, no, He was terrible to me. He treated me like crap. And honestly, he even used the words a terrible person. Like, that's the way he described it. Now, Eric, I know that you kind of interpreted it a little bit differently before we got started here. So I'm sure you saw the interview. I'm sure everybody in here saw the interview. So let's get your thoughts on the whole thing on the Tua versus Brian Flores once and for all.
Yeah, listen, I'm not here to come in and defend Brian Flores. That's not what I'm here to do. The opinion, like many do. Good defensive football coach, not great with people, not good with people. And his treatment of Tua reflected that. I think he was trying to come in and he was either A, trying to do a really bad Bill Belichick impersonation, or B, trying to punish a guy that because he didn't get the quarterback that he wanted in the draft.
That's not even true, but okay. Go ahead, Eric. No, go ahead.
Probably a combination of the two.
He's refuting that he didn't want Tua. Allegedly, Brian Flores did sign on to the Tua draft, so we haven't heard anything to refute that yet.
Regardless of whether he did or didn't, somewhere along the way, Tua and Brian Flores just were not a match after a good long, after, you know, a while. And listen, that's not the way you can be hard on a guy without repeatedly being in his ear telling him that he sucks every day.
That you should have drafted Herbert, even though he didn't want to draft, even though he didn't want to draft Herbert.
It's not productive, number one. And number two, you know, you're not going to make anybody better doing that. You know, if it's one thing to be hard on a guy and then kind of couch it like, listen, I'm tough on you because I have these high expectations, because I know what you can do. Ultimately, that's always where the hard coaching comes from, is a place of like, I know you're capable of more. I'm riding you because I want to get more out of you. With Tua, it really was just, hey, you suck, and I'm going to make sure you know it because I think you suck. That's really the long and the short of it, was my read on it. I don't think Tua called him a terrible person. I think he said, you know, it's just like in any business when you have this, you know, I think he meant to say it's like a terrible person to have around you, somebody that's always negative and down on you and, you know, never trying to, you know, give you any words of positive encouragement, anything like that. I don't necessarily know if it was like, oh man, this Brian Flores guy is just real scumbag. I think it was just, you know, that's not, having a person like that around isn't conducive to getting the best out of his players.
Duke, what are your thoughts?
I would agree with everything Eric said. I don't think that the things that I've been seeing on Facebook and other places, I know people have attempted to call him soft. And saying that, you know, there's a difference between hard coaching and someone just being a jerk. And it sounded like that Flores is more of the latter. But Tua has overcome a lot. And, you know, and I think he even said so in the interview that there's, you know, sometimes you have to go through things. If I could go back and tell myself a few years ago, you need to go through these things to become who you are now. And I would agree with that. I also saw a tweet about the timing of it. I think it was from Armando. And I would kind of agree with that. We have a saying around here in the South that let sleeping dogs lie. And does this necessarily need to come up right now? I don't think it's going to be a story that gets pushed into more than what it is this week. It's just, you know, something in between games, and it'll die and go away. But, you know, at some point you just got to be like, you know what, I don't want to talk about it, or I'm not going to say anything. And I'm glad that he's at a place where he can get it off of his chest. But that would be the only thing that I would see that's probably a talking point, maybe, that others aren't discussing. It's just, is now the right time to go into all of this? Maybe, maybe not. It's not anything too critical, but I agree with Eric. I don't think he was necessarily trying to call out Brian Flores or tell him he's horrible or any of this. I think it was just, he was just expressing how he felt. And more than that, it was that the contrast between the what Flores is doing and what Mike McDaniel is doing. And so I think that's one highlight we can take from it, is the fact that McDaniel was brought in and lifted him up and encouraged him and did the right things and turned him into a $200 million quarterback. So.
And I'm going to go ahead and let Ron talk next, but I just wanted to emphasize something that Aaron Anders just talked about in the chat. And CK on the 3 yards per carry team also mentioned this. My brain is blanking out. He's not unfamiliar. That's the word. He's not unfamiliar with hard coaching. Again, in Alabama, he played for Nick Saban, who many feel is one of the toughest coaches you could ever ask to play for, ever. But even Nick Saban, in his own interviews, said that he always backed up his QB, always backed up his QB, whether that was Tua or Jalen Hurts, who admittedly he had to bench for reasons. And then even Mac Jones, he would always try to support. He would always try to reinforce the quarterbacks on his team. And he expected great things from them. No question about it. We all, and I, even in spite of us as Dolphins fans being jaded by Nick Saban for what he did to us back in 2006, it was just, this was the situation. Tua had Nick Saban as head coach. He was probably the toughest coach you could ever play for, especially in the college scene. Came to Miami, dealt with Brian Flores. And I said something similar during the post-game show on Saturday about Vic Fangio. It's not professional. It's not professional for you to go out of your way, it feels like. And this was the part of it. He mentioned that every single day, Flores was beating down on him. What could you possibly have been trying to accomplish with that? Is that, 'cause if he's trying to beat Belichick, did Belichick beat down on Tom Brady every single day? Like, dude, you sucked. Get better. Is that is that the secret to Brady's success? He got better out of spite to Bill Belichick? Somehow, I just doubt that that's the case. I can't imagine that that's how it went. Like, all these players who played in New England, were they succeeding just to tell Belichick to F off? I can't imagine that that was how it went over there. And Belichick's probably one of the toughest NFL coaches to ever exist. With Flores, it did feel personal. It seemed like he was going out of his way to make sure that Tua knew he didn't support him. And when the Deshaun Watson stuff came up, we all kept wondering, why doesn't he say he doesn't want Watson? Why doesn't he just put this whole thing to bed? Why doesn't he just make it go away? Because all he has to do is say, we're not interested in Deshaun Watson. Tua Tagovailoa is our quarterback and we're supporting him. We all wondered that at the time. Why isn't he saying it? And there were a lot of us who just decided that, you know what? The reason why he's not saying it is because it's not true. He's not supporting Tua. He does want Deshaun Watson. And just thinking about that today, if we had gone along with that plan, if Brian Flores had gotten his way, if we had gotten Deshaun Watson and sent Tua packing to the Cleveland Browns, like, for all the talk about whether Tua is bad or he's not good enough to win the big games or he's not good enough to be in the Super Bowl, let me tell you something. I am sure that Cleveland would love to hit their hands on Tua right now.
You want to talk about a bad contract after the summer we just were through with all this contract talk? Mm. Oh, my God. The Dolphins would have had to fully guarantee that Watson deal.
Like, the Browns are stuck with him. They can't get rid of him. Nobody wants him. He doesn't play good enough to trade.
My counter to that would be perhaps Miami was more of a destination spot than Cleveland. And so, therefore, they would have gotten a better deal than what Cleveland did just because of that.
We would have gotten a cheaper Duke, but we obviously weren't going to get Deshaun Watson at the Houston Texans.
Yeah, we don't. I mean, Deshaun Watson, the player that he was on the field, is a very, very good quarterback. Everything off the field and everything we've seen since, you're not taking him over Tua. But yeah, that would just be my point there. It's like they had to fully guarantee his contract because he did not want to go to Cleveland. And that's the only place he was willing to take him, I guess. So they're like, well, we'll do whatever we got to do. So that would be my only thing to that, Eric. But yeah, that's a terrible contract, and it would probably still be bad, and we would probably still be regretting it regardless. So yeah.
And that's what I'm thinking about. Like, could you imagine if we had bit the bullet and said, you know what, Brian Flores, you're right. We'll go ahead and we'll get you your guy. Like, we'll go get Deshaun Watson. The buyer's remorse that we dodged is unbelievable to me. And even then, Flores still wasn't a fan of Tua. I just feel like it's unprofessional. It was unprofessional. Like, you serve no purpose of doing that to your quarterback. If you are a head coach, your job is to figure out what makes them tick and figure out how to get the most out of them, not beat them the hell down until there's nothing left of them. And then you get to pick another quarterback because you feel like he's served his purpose. All right. Now, Ron, I know I've gone ahead and I've done my ramble, but you've watched Tua ever since his college days. You've watched him with the Nick Saban era. You've watched Tua pretty much ever since he got there. So you've seen him with every coach that he's ever been with at this point. So I want to hear your thoughts on the whole thing.
First of all, we have to wonder, why is it the coaches that come out of the Belichick tree, mostly, all they seem to pull from him was, you have to be an asshole to be a good coach. I don't even know that Bill Belichick was an asshole. I believe Bill Belichick was a great coach because he understood what every single person in that organization needed to be doing. The players, the coaches, and everything else, how it needed to be, what he needed from them, and how to portray that to the coaches and to the players. That's why he was a good coach. But for some reason, guys like Josh McDaniels and Brian Flores seem to think, oh, I have to go out there and just be an asshole to people. That's the secret. That's the key. So Brian Flores apparently brought that mindset to Miami. And it wasn't just with Tua. Here's the thing. If you've been in the 3 yards per carry Discord chat only fence since near the beginning, everything that you're hearing now in the bit that you heard from Tua isn't new information. It was pure validation of what we were already told from the inside almost 2 years ago, like a year and a half ago. And it wasn't just with Tua. The coaching staff and the way he spoke to the coaches, the way he spoke to the people that worked in the office, it was all the same thing. It was terrible. If you recall, it was, I don't remember his name. Who is the... There's a media person who used to be in Miami, and now he's either, I think he's with ESPN or NFL. Darlington, thank you.
Yeah, Jeff Darlington.
Jeff Darlington said when Flores first got fired over 2 years ago that Flores lost his job, not because of performance. He lost it because of relationships. So anybody who had a lot of this information and was paying attention, who wasn't blinded by Tua hate because they watch too many of the media guys that like to bag on him because it gets a lot of clicks and views and has been for 3 years, or they just think he's got a noodle arm and they refuse to admit they were wrong. If you're not blinded by hate and you're paying attention to and reading between the lines and reading the tea leaves of what's been happening since Flores was fired, all the information is there that Tua is telling the truth. I've seen so many people in the media and outside of the media say, oh, I just can't believe that. I think Tua's not telling the truth. I think he's lying. There's no way Flores said those things. Flores said those things. Today, Flores had a statement out. I don't know if it was because it was coaching availability, a coordinator availability in Minnesota, or he just decided to release a statement. And he had a couple paragraphs on, oh, I wish Tua the best, and I just wanted the best for him, blah, 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 blah. You know what he didn't say in all that?
That he didn't do it.
What Tua was saying wasn't true. That's what he didn't say. So let's start with that, number one. Number two, we all think that coaching or being a player somehow makes you a different kind of human being than doing anything else in your life. We all hear, just about anybody listening to this job has or to this podcast has a job, or had a job, had several jobs, or will have a job at some point. And I've never, or can't imagine I would thrive in a place where every single day somebody just came up to me and told me, "You suck. I should have hired the other guy I interviewed every single freaking day." That there's no one's getting any. That's not coaching. That's denigration. That's being dismissive. And that's what Flores was doing to Tua. And I tell you what, Flores may have been trying, in my opinion, to push Tua out. Let me just break this guy so he asks for a trade, make my life easier so I can go get Deshaun Watson, because apparently pieces of shit people like other pieces of shit people. What a combo that would have been on this team. We have McDaniel, we have Tua. Instead, we would have had Flores and Deshaun Watson. Yeah, that wouldn't have gone very well. They'd both be probably out right now, in my opinion.
No, Watson would have been stuck with us.
Flores, well, yeah, and I agree with Duke, by the way. It would have been a normal contract. The only reason Cleveland offered it a full deal is they were out, and he told them, "No, I'm not interested. You were out," and Cleveland said, "Let's just offer him fully guaranteed." That's why that deal didn't reset the market. It was a one-off. That we wouldn't have had to do that. We were a destination. We were just at one point about the only destination Deshaun Watson wanted. But it just, this show is lighthearted. It's fun. I like to have fun on this show. We like to joke around. This topic just pisses me off because Tua went through so much crap under the Flores years, and he never said a freaking word. He just went in and tried to do his job as best as he could with multiple offensive coordinators, even at the same time. Trying to throw the ball to Albert Wilson and DeVante Parker and no running game and no O-line and no cohesion in the offense and a coach that didn't believe in him, didn't want him there, and told him every day he sucked and I should have drafted Herbert, which, by the way, Flores didn't want Herbert. He said he wanted anybody but Herbert. That's also other information that's been available to anybody that wants to go find it over the last couple of years. He said he wanted anybody but Herbert. So now he says he wants Herbert. And the second Deshaun Watson started getting unhappy and things started going south in 2020, suddenly Flores is anti-Tua. Well, how am I going to get rid of a guy, right? How am I going to get rid of a guy that hasn't even played yet? I'm going to throw him in, even though Ryan Fitzpatrick is playing good and we're playing good. I'm going to throw him in. I'm going to throw him to the Wolves, and I'm going to get rid of him. That's all this was. And we want to talk about tampering. So what about conversations I would imagine Flores and Deshaun Watson probably had that nobody knew about? There's your tampering too. Yeah, Flores, man, I just don't even get into it with this guy anymore. Thank God he's just not our coach anymore. We made the right decision. We took the right quarterback. We definitely made the right decision firing Flores and made the right decision hiring McDaniel. And I'm glad that we're here in the place we are now. So I'm ready to move on, but I mean, the only thing I could say about this, Tua did kind of bring this up, so any conversations that anybody's having right now, it's a little bit on Tua. Yes, Dan Le Batard asked the question. I think Tua kind of maybe misspoke a little bit, right? And now we're here talking about this, but I believe that we made the right decision. I believe we made the right call, and I know that Tua is the right guy for this organization, so be that as it may. And I don't believe that the way Flores treated people, Tua and others, that he ever deserves to be a head coach again. Because here's the number one thing you don't see from Flores is any personal accountability for anything that went wrong in Miami. Nothing. He's never come out one time and said, "Hey, I should have done this a little better. I should have done that a little better." That's not surprising. Josh McDaniels, right? He goes, he coaches Denver. It blows up in his face. Then he goes to the Raiders. He learned nothing. It all blew up in his face. It was all the same problems again. It would be the same thing if Flores went and coached a team again, because he learned nothing. Pure narcissist right there. Pure narcissist. It's ridiculous.
Flores but said that he
I think Tua has proven all the doubters wrong, and if at this point you don't think that he has, you're just not paying attention. Confirmation bias. Don't want to believe the truth.
I will say that Flores said that he had done some reflecting, whatever the heck that means. But I do agree that his body language and the way he spoke did kind of indicate that he felt he was justified in his decisions. So it's very difficult to find people who are truly willing to admit that, you know what, no, I messed up. And I wish I had done it differently.
And one thing to think about with what Ron was talking about, I guarantee everyone listening to this show is you're talking about has a job. If you walked into your job every single day and that was what your supervisor said and treated you like that, you would probably not stay there for very long. You would be looking for another job. You may even quit without even having another job. And no one's going to call you soft.
Yeah, that's just not how you treat people. And again, another point that was already made, Saban. There isn't a more stringent. That's the thing. There's tough, there's strict, stringent coach. Bill Belichick and Nick Saban are stringent coaches. That means they have a particular way they know they want things done, and they expect everybody to do it that way. Nowhere in there does that spell, I need to be an asshole to get people to do what I want to do. Clearly, these people that coached under Belichick missed the message and learned nothing while coaching under him. Learned nothing. And maybe what he does just isn't transferable to other teams. It's just all in his mind, and he knows how he needs to do it, whereas Shanahan has a coaching tree bigger than Parcells. You know what I mean? So some coaching styles just aren't transferable. So all these people that were trying to go be the next Bill Belichick, who had worked for Belichick, just didn't understand what made him so great. And Flores is the prime example of somebody who didn't understand what he was seeing for all those years and why Belichick was as good a coach as he was. I know some people say it was because of Tom Brady. I'm a Dolphins fan, so I'm going to say it was because of Tom Brady. But no, really, Belichick is truly a good coach. And I think we're going to see again, because I believe Bill Belichick will be the coach of the Giants next year. But we can talk about this offseason. That's not a Dolphins topic.
So. I don't know. That's an offseason topic. I think Belichick might be enjoying hanging out with his 20-year-old girlfriend. And it's just so
itchy. I'll say this about Bill Belichick is, I think I read somewhere that he's going to be an analyst, maybe.
Yeah.
On ESPN, maybe, for the Monday Night Games.
Yeah, he's working for ESPN now.
I will absolutely enjoy that. Because if you've ever seen anything of him when he's not behind the podium at a press conference.
He's so much fun. He's fantastic. Oh, yeah.
Yep. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he's going to be better at that than Tom Brady is in the booth. I think Belichick will just be very candid. I think he'll be very on point. He'll point out stuff that we may not even see because he's good like that. I'm looking forward to actually seeing him in the booth doing that kind of stuff. And I hope it's such a big hit that he doesn't want to leave the booth.
Yes, because I don't want him to catch Shula.
Well,
that's all I care about. I don't want him to catch Shula, so I hope he stays retired.
I know all the people up north that are Patriots fans, if he ever does, they're going to be like, oh, he's the greatest ever. Look, there's too many asterisks by his name for that to ever. Shula's the GOAT. Just accept it and deal with it. Sorry, Pats fans. It's Shula Cope.
All right.
And with that declaration, we'll move on past this topic. And we'll
talk about preseason. Let's talk about these Fins, man.
Let's talk about that Commanders game. So, unfortunately, a lot of injuries that we didn't want to see. River Craycraft is now apparently dealing with an upper body injury of some kind. I'm hoping that they're just kind of putting him on ice and he'll be back. But
I don't anticipate he's going to be. I think he'll be on the PUP to start the season.
Well, he'll be on injured reserve, maybe for future return.
Designated to return. You're right.
Yeah, because once you like the way that the PUP works,
for anyone, PUP is just like a preseason thing, right?
It's off season thing. You're on the PUP list. You can't come off. If once you come off it, you're done with it. You can't go back on, which is probably why. Like all the talk about OBJ, Ron, I know that you hear what's concerned about him. I think the reason they're just keeping OBJ on the PUP list is because they don't feel the need to throw him out there right now, especially if he has been dealing with some minor stuff. McDaniel keeps talking about he's almost there. And it's not like with Byron Jones where he's just kind of missing from the building. Odell Beckham is there. He's moving. He's running.
What about Isaiah Wynn? Is he there? Has he even been cited? We know that he's alive.
We've been told he's alive. And that apparently...
By who?
McDaniel said he's working to get back. McDaniel said he's working to get back. So I don't know what that means. Maybe they're saving Isaiah Wynn as their mid-season insurance policy for when other people go down. It's like, okay, look, now's your time to shine.
What we're going to do? Everybody's going to be clamoring for an inside interior lineman trade, and they're going to get Isaiah Wynn back.
They're going to get Isaiah Wynn back. It's like, here's your guy. Like, we didn't have to trade anybody. He's just there now. Look, we have Isaiah Wynn.
Okay, I want to make a bold prediction here. First of all, Lewis, this answers the question of whether or not Berrios makes the team we discussed post game. The Craycraft injury pretty much locks him in, as well as Malik Washington.
So. I told you he was locked in regardless. Berrios,
I felt like Berrios was. Yeah,
but my bold prediction is OBJ has to be off the PUP list by Tuesday at 4 p.m. That's the cutdown time period. If he's still on PUP at that point, he's on PUP for at least the first 4 weeks. He's going to come off the PUP list on Sunday. That's my bold prediction. It's just going to be like, okay, oh, he's ready to go now. It's one of those, he's a vet, he's skipping the preseason.
I mean, treatment.
That'd be nice, especially now with Craycraft. I mean, that's a thin, I think about it, if you go into the season, if they don't pick anybody up, that means they feel good about OBJ. Because if not, you're talking about going into the season with, you know, Hill and Waddle, obviously the best duo wide receivers in the NFL. But outside of that, Malik Washington, Ezinkama, Berrios, and insert other dude here. That's thin as hell with no Craycraft or OBJ. And I feel real good or bad that Craycraft is not going to be ready for the week one. I just, doesn't sound like what McDaniel is saying.
No,
that doesn't sound like that kind of speak that tells me he's feeling great about that. So, I mean, I would be shocked. At this point, you would almost think that Miami would go and grab, like try and find a guy. And there's really not a lot to get, especially with what Miami wants to do with that third receiver. I mean, they can't. You guys got out there that are, there's guys that are hurt, there's guys that are old. It's really, yeah, Michael Thomas is out there. He's kind of old. Julio Jones, I believe I saw on the list when I looked at it, is out there. He's kind of old, and, you know, people aren't really looking at him. So if they don't go try and get a receiver,
they could go get Jarvis Landry.
I would say that OBJ is okay. Jarvis Landry even, yeah. But, I mean, shoot, when was the last time he was in the league? 2 years ago?
No, I mean, he's been getting workouts with other teams all offseason.
So he's getting – players or coaches that are looking for a wide receiver are working him out and not signing him.
But hear me out, though. This is Mike McDaniel we're talking about here. He can make anything work. So if there was ever hope for Jarvis Landry to make a comeback, it would be in Miami.
Yeah, but Mike McDaniel's thing is he wants fast guys. Jarvis Landry.
Yeah, he wants
true. Jarvis Landry's slow.
Hey, you know who I saw? Wait a minute. You know who I saw that was out there? My God, I don't even remember his name. The receiver kind of slash running back that was drafted by the Raiders third round, and they traded him that offseason to us. Then he got hurt.
Lynn Bowden?
Yes, I saw him. Bowden's out there. Go grab Bowden. I don't know. Is Albert Wilson available?
Devontae Parker was spotted on the sidelines recently.
Yeah, Jameer Grant got picked up by somebody recently.
He retired right after.
Did he for real? He was signed and he's retired?
And then he just retired.
I didn't know.
He tried.
There are folks in the chat mentioning Hunter Renfro. I don't know why.
He wouldn't be terrible.
I don't know why, but he's not getting any looks. Like, has anybody even brought him in?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't say I pay close attention to, you know, what other teams are doing with their guys they're bringing in. I don't know that I pay close attention to that. All I see,
Ron, just for the sake of argument, all I see from the news is that here's a story about why the Saints should pick him up. Here's one why the Vikings should pick him up. Why the Rams should sign him. Why the Raiders should sign him. Why the Cowboys should sign him. But not a single
It's got to be an injury. Simple as that. Because he hasn't been out of it long enough, and he was good enough in recent memory to be on someone's roster competing for a roster spot. It's got to be an injury. There's nothing else that really makes sense.
I think I look at it like this. He's not a guy that it's going to be an answer for you if your top guy goes down. And most teams are probably just trying to evaluate who they have currently on the roster. So Renfro is going to be a guy that sits week one and then gets a call up on week two when his contract won't be guaranteed, and play for a team that has a little minor dinged up injury or something like that, maybe even Miami. And I'm seeing in the chat, somebody talking about Jahan Dotson. I think they're going to be looking at, you know, if they need that additional receiver, I think they're going to be looking at cut down guys. As your sixth wide receiver. I don't think he's getting cut either, but I think that's I think they'll be looking for some guys like that. I mean, we're talking about wide receiver three here. I mean, look at the Bills, and you know, I want to pick on them for a little bit. I mean, they're bringing in dudes that we tried out and sent on their way, and they're signing them because their guys are just either hurt or not doing very well. So it could be a lot worse, you know, but I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think OBJ is going to be back.
I'm half surprised with as crazy and harebrained as Mike McDaniel and Chris Greer are. We're not getting more comments about Brandon Ayuk.
Oh my God. I mean, no. Because Ayuk wants a big contract. Plus, they have to trade picks for him. Extremely
joking. I don't think
No, I mean, I would love, man, that would be fun. See, here's the thing.
It would be.
If Ayuk would play for what he's probably worth, they probably make it work. The problem is Ayuk wants Hill money. You know, he wants Justin Jefferson Crabtree money, or not, I'm sorry, CeeDee Lamb money.
We could go get Michael Crabtree.
CeeDee Lamb money
somewhere. Yeah.
And he's not really that. I don't even know that he's Waddle money. Like, that's the thing for me. And I think, like, I promise you, you know McDaniel.
McDaniel would love
salivating to have Ayuk with these guys. Like, he would just be so excited by that. But it doesn't make sense for the organization to consider that move. I mean, trust me, it popped in my head more than once, but every time it does, it's like a tenth of a second, and then I remind myself of all those things I just said and move on, and how much fun it would be to have a guy like that. But you got to find guys like that in the draft. Like, you don't know. I'm excited personally about Malik Washington. I'm excited to see what he can do, and I have a feeling we're going to get to see more of what he can do a little faster than we thought, considering what's going on with everything with the wide receiver core behind Waddle and Hill.
Well, if you notice the first play of the game, I think it was a two wide receiver set. It was Craycraft and Malik Washington. So obviously in a real game setting, that's going to be Hill and Waddle. But the fact that he's the next guy up in that regard – may mean something, it may not. I tend to look at those as that's trust they have out there. Specifically, he likes to block. Him and Craycraft both. He's probably a much better blocker than Braxton Berrios, so he's going to get those kind of looks. But I just noticed that. I was kind of watching a little bit of the game today, trying to watch some things, and I noticed that first play of the game, it was Craycraft, and it was Malik Washington. It was a two tight end set. It was Julian Hill, who we haven't even discussed the tight end section because those guys are going to get targets this year.
And so, that's getting interesting too. The positioning behind Jonnu may not be what we thought it was going to be.
Yeah. So the wide receiver three may not be necessarily as big of a need as we thought, simply because we've got some tight ends and Julian Hill, the bulldoze cornerback on that play he had. But I think Malik Washington's going to get some run. They got some stuff for him. And from everything that I've read, this is a difficult offense to pick up, particularly for a first-year wide receiver. So, maybe somebody else that gets a little bit of love early on. But I think Washington will start making his presence felt later in the season, for sure.
I mean, Ezekonmus had a lot of time to sit and learn that playbook, and clearly they wanted a role for him last year. He might be a guy that gets pushed up maybe into some more snaps than
Ezekonmus is basically becoming. Ezekonmus is the Debo of this offense. Like they get so.
Oh, we're
like,
back.
Even more than Tyreek, it feels like they get so bizarrely creative with how they give him the ball. Like they give him reverses. They hand the ball off to him. Like they throw it up to him like a Devontae Parker type deal. Like they recognize that there is so much potential in what Eric Ezekonmus offers the team that's so different than what everybody else can do. I truly believe that at this point, again, if I were the Dolphins, which I am not, and maybe some of you think that's a good thing, but whatever, that's a different discussion. If I were the Dolphins, I would do everything in my power to make sure that Ezekonmus is on the final roster, because he's a different type of player. And mind you, it's not that he's, oh, he's different in the sense that, oh, Chase Claypool is different, that he's a big body that you can just heave it up to. No, Ezukama has spent 2 years now training in this offense, tightening his moves. And I remember that we were quizzing Wes Welker constantly. Where is Ezukama? Where is Eric Ezukama? Why are we not seeing Ezukama? And he just said, he'll get there when he's ready. He'll get there when he's ready. He'll get there when he's ready. And finally, last year, briefly, we saw him and I guess he's ready. Like, I cannot imagine. Yeah. And then he got hurt. Right. And there was a little bit of a brief moment there where we were starting to hear rumors that the Dolphins might be moving off of Ezukama altogether because of another injury that we had no idea about. Well, clearly the news of his death was greatly overstated because he's back and he's making those same plays again. And if he's going to be the Debo of this offense, if he's going to offer that versatility, I would easily, happily get rid of Braxton Berrios and to make sure Ezukama makes the team. And I know, Duke, that you, I love you, man. I wish you were right. I wish you were right. I truly do.
Well,
he's going to make the team.
We're never going to know now because on Tuesday, Craycraft's going to go on IR, and yeah, it's going to be the six that we have. So we'll never know if that was the case or not. Unless we just see him not out there on returns. But I think given what we've seen from Malik Washington on the punt returns, it's not that he's been bad, but I'm not sure he knows that fair catches exist. So,
Hold on. Time out. If I were a team, after what we saw during the preseason, I would just never get fair. I would just never let a fair catch happen again. I would just brace myself for impact and then wait for the defenseless receiver call.
Yeah, that was garbage too. But I think that they're going to put Berrios out there specifically on punt returns just because he's a safe option. You're not going to get a lot of muffs and stuff, you know, like Jakeem Grant. You know, he was extraordinarily explosive and could take one of the house at any moment. He could also let it bounce off of his face mask and turn the ball over. You're not going to get either of those from Berrios. So they'd like that. So, I think Ezukama, he needed that game and he produced. So good for him. I'm glad to see that.
All right, Mr. Lewis, sir. Remember, after last show, we talked about we'd have a couple little segments. I know we got into the Tua conversation, plus it's just preseason. But yes, segment one here, Chad's takeaways. I've got them for me. But I've got them on my phone, not on the computer, which is not good video. But if you're listening, nobody cares because you can't see it. I'm looking down at my phone. So
yes,
I'm going to look at my phone to read these. You guys ready?
Everybody's wondering, that's our good friend Chad Ronnebaum, who is not in this episode, but we're going to have him be a part of this show one way or another.
He's going to be part of it each week, whether he's here or not. So here we go. It's Chad's takeaways from last week's preseason game against the Commanders. Number one, Skylar Thompson is leading Mike White for the number two job. And I also want to add something that Duke said. Duke's shaking his head. I'll let you disagree after we say it. Since I'm saying, I might get to interject. But, Duke, you mentioned about the starting receivers that were with Tua, right? The 5-for-5 drive, touchdown, right? All that. It's the same receivers that Mike White and Skylar Thompson have been dealing with, by the way. Just want to throw that out there. But Eazy-E has now made the team with the injuries at wide receiver. Well, then he's just agreeing with what we said there for sure. Cam Smith, Storm Duck, and Ethan Bonner appear they will beat out Nick Needham, who is in trouble because safety Neal is the special team's ace. Yeah, I think Neal makes a team. He might be right on that. Jonnu Smith is going to put up big fantasy numbers and expect he will have the ball in his hands at least 10 times per game. Is it possible to have an all-Dolphins fantasy team? Because I think my fantasy team this year might be like four Dolphins, man. I'm just saying. And I don't ever do that. I rarely even have one because I'm afraid I'm being biased and it's causing me to draft poorly. Now I'm doing it. Now I'm hurting myself by doing that. All right, and then another one now. You guys, this might set off us talk about the defense a little bit. Chalk Robinson did not look very good setting the edge, and I think the Dolphins are testing if Jay Phillips can start this week. I assume he means start week one, but maybe he means to see if Jalen will play week three of the preseason. I'm not sure. So that's Chad's takeaways there for the for the game.
For the Jalen Phillips thing, I'm fully like, I don't want him playing more than one snap, but give him one snap to be out on the field, feel himself explode off the snap, take him right out. That's how I
let him just let him feel. That's why Tua wanted to play. That's why a lot of these guys want to play. Now I think you'll see Tyreek Hill get some reps week three, just like a few, maybe not even a full drive, just because he wants to feel it. So he's gonna go out there, have a little fun, outrun some four string dude that's gonna be working for UPS in 2 weeks, and smile and laugh and go to the sideline and get excited about the season. That's my opinion. So I wouldn't mind. Let Jalen Phillips get in there and just feel it a little bit, man. You just got to feel it. Got to feel that first one, especially when you're coming back from injury. You hear players talk about that all the time. Obviously, I don't play professional sports, if you couldn't guess. But you hear them talk about all the time, man. When they come back from that injury, they're just like, they just want to either get hit or they want to explode off that leg or they want to reach up high to catch that ball because it was some kind of shoulder injury, or they just want to, whatever it is, or they want to go tackle somebody. They want to just get that mental monkey off their back so they can go, move on and play the game without thinking about it. So I wouldn't mind at all if Jalen Phillips got in there and even just had a couple snaps. It wouldn't bother me. Now, somebody else said they want to snap. Was it? I saw something about so-and-so wants to play this preseason game. I think it's a Jordan Poyer. No. I just say no. Well, you don't need it. You don't need the snaps. You're not coming back from injury. Just stay your ass over on the sideline.
I mean, I'll say this about I think Duke is going to agree with me on this one. The whole Skyler experiment was interesting, to say the least. That man, like, he's never met a pocket that he wouldn't try to run away from. I don't understand. You know, like, he's running around when he doesn't need to.
It's funny because we always talk about quarterbacks that are limited by their ability to need to play within structure. We never talk about the inverse of that, which is exactly what Skylar Thompson is. The guy is not he can't do anything unless he's been scrambling around for 5 or 10 seconds, and then he'll be on the run and throw a frozen rope 35 yards. But that's just not a practical way to play quarterback in the league. Now, granted, he has more physical ability than a Mike White. He's got a bigger arm. He's got better running ability. But he just doesn't know how to play the position in the context of a functioning offense. He's better when everything is garbage around.
Yeah, that's where he thrives. He thrives in street ball.
Exactly. And for an offense that is so predicated on timing like this one is, I know Mike White and his accuracy issues at times probably isn't the right answer there. I don't feel good about either option, really. So it's not like I'm making a hearty endorsement of Mike White, but I would probably just rather him, just because I think he probably can execute those shorter throws a little bit better, but you're it's not great options either way.
For what you want from RQB2, which is to come in a spell, maybe start a game, maybe. Yeah, I'm White. But I wouldn't trust either of these guys long term. If we discussed this before, if something happened, we would need to explore other options. But we don't have to think about that right now, so let's not.
Yeah, that's probably one of the biggest things for me is the backup quarterback position. It's going to be Mike White. And I will also disagree with Chad on this other thing. And listen, Nick Needham, I understand that he's getting a lot of extended playing time, and I understand there's a lot of players right now who are showing them, who are flexing right now and showing what they can do. Storm Duck, Isaiah Johnson, all these guys. I get it. I understand it. They're doing a phenomenal job with what time they're being given. There is some, like, for all the talk about we want our best players out there, there is some level of nepotism in the NFL. Nick Needham has been here. He's been established. And it's not like he's playing like a slouch. He's making plays. Like he's doing, he's just not as flashy because other teams, because Storm Duck is a better name and they're targeting him more. So he has more opportunities to make plays. I don't see Nick Needham getting thrown his direction most of the time anyway, when he's out there. So for me, the fact that he offers that much versatility, the fact that he can do corner, slot, safety, he can play all those positions. If something does happen to anybody, their first go-to would probably end up being Nick Needham. Come and save us because X player got hurt and you're the one who can do all the things.
Over, so, you're saying over. I think Bonner's made the team, so I don't even include him in this, but you're saying over Storm.
Well, Bonner's hurt, so that hurts him.
Well, and that's true. That's true. He's hurt. I mean, I don't know. What's, does anybody know what the extent of that is?
I don't think that. Concussion. I think he'll be fine.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I'm not. You know, unless it was some major concussion, which I don't believe it was. So,
major.
I forgot it was concussion.
My thought on Nick Needham is, if this were Madden, right, you keep Nick Needham, and he's your fifth cornerback. But right now, he's your fifth cornerback, and he's an actual human being. And there are teams out there that need cornerbacks. And if you know that he's not going to be your first call up, right? The top three, I think, are set. That's going to be Ramsey, Fuller, and Kohu. We know that. We don't know the status of Cam Smith. We assume he's going to be fine for the regular season. You know he's going to be in there. You've got Ethan Bonner. You've got Saron Neal. If Nick Needham is your fifth corner.
Okay, well, hold on, though. Hold on. But you're
saying
– You're assuming Saron Neal has somehow leapfrogged.
Well, it doesn't matter.
He's making the team because of special teams.
It doesn't matter either that. If he's your fifth corner, and it's great if a guy like Nick Needham is your fifth corner. But I think in fairness to him, if they see that he's not going to get a lot of snaps and he deserves more snaps, I'm 100% willing to trade him for his benefit. If you know that you've got guys that are ahead of him, because we look at it like, well, if this guy gets hurt and this guy gets hurt, we can call him off the bench and that's going to be great. But he's sitting out on the bench wanting to play and he may or may not. So I would look at that option if that's the case. Now, he may be the fourth guy. And if that's the case, you do keep him. But I think out of benefit to him, you look at the option and say, hey, listen, you're our fifth guy. We've got some guys that we like. We don't envision a lot of playing time for you. Here's Team X. They want you to play on their team, and you're going to be their second or third guy. We're going to trade you. I would do that just because I think he's deserving of that. And, again, it all depends on where he falls on the depth chart. So that part we don't really know. But it would not. I don't know that I necessarily see him being a cut, but I could definitely see him being a trade option for some team that wants a nickel corner that doesn't have one and doesn't have the depth that Miami has. Because if they're looking at it like, well, he's not going to give us much more than Bonner, and Bonner's our fourth guy or Bonner's our fifth guy, and this guy's down the depth chart, get something for nothing because he's going to be gone next season anyway, and you're not going to get anything for it. And that's the one thing I used to argue with a guy on the Fin Sider a lot about the different things. And one of the things we would definitely agree on is don't wait an extra year to trade a player. If you know he's not going to be in your long-term plans, get something now. And I think Nick Needham may be that guy. And I know I mentioned several weeks ago about Kader Kohu, but that was another condition that he had been surpassed on the depth chart, and he has not. He's your third corner. So, that would be an option I would explore because I like some of these other guys and they're going to give you snaps that I think, and look, the safety room's loaded too.
Man, I was sitting here the whole time you're talking, thinking, what are we going to do at safety, man? What
you got?
Like we went and got Marcus May. And I kind of almost feel like we didn't even need to do that. Like we got dudes.
There are more defensive players on this roster than we can keep.
Especially in the secondary.
Yeah, I mean, is Needham is what, your fifth corner, and if he's a safety, he's at least your fourth safety. I don't. I mean,
are we over sure Elijah Campbell? I don't know that he is.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Hold on. Okay. So, but here's what I'm saying now. You guys are making so. Let's hit. I want to hear your list. So, if we're talking about Needham is the fourth or the fifth safe, the fifth corner or the fourth safety. Okay, I get it. Fourth safety there's no question. Javon Holland, Jordan Poyer, and Marcus May. 1, 2, 3. Got it.
Elijah Campbell.
Elijah Campbell. Yeah. I don't know.
Campbell, dude. I'm saying like I don't know that Needham's better than Campbell at safety.
Okay,
special teams ace too.
Okay, but here's the thing though. But Nick Needham can play special teams too. This is where my defense of Needham comes in full strength, because we're saying Ethan Bonner. Okay, Ethan Bonner has not played starting caliber talent yet. Neither has Cam Smith, for that matter. We have not seen Cam Smith or Bonner against guys that actually are worth a damn, for lack of a better term. Like, let's see, can Ethan Bonner, can Cam Smith carry on with the likes of Justin Jefferson? No, I bet not. Probably neither can Nick Needham, but at least we've seen what Nick Needham can do against actual starting caliber receivers, and he did a pretty good job.
Pre-injury, though. I don't think Nick Needham has not been even close to what he was.
It's been a year and a half.
Yeah, so maybe now this is the year, but, I mean, I guess we're not really – they're not seeing it in training camp, and we're not really seeing it in games, so
Hold on. Because again, flashy plays do not necessarily mean that, oh, that's the guy.
But where do you envision the snap count for Nick Needham being this season? Let's assume no injuries. I mean, yeah, if some guy gets hurt week one.
We can't assume no injuries. Something's going to happen to somebody.
But you can't sit here and say, well, your fourth guy or third guy or second guy is going to miss a significant amount of time.
Yeah, you're assuming no injuries. I mean, 10 a game? 10, 12 a game?
Where is that snap count for him? You're definitely going to have your top three corners. You're going to have your two safeties. And you're probably going to have a sixth defensive back, whether that's Needham, whether that's Marcus May. And Marcus May played really well in this game. The question is going to be, is he your seventh defensive back, and where are those snaps coming from? Now, again, I would prefer to keep him. I'm not trying to get rid of him. I like Nick Needham. I'm a fan of Nick Needham. But as a fan of Nick Needham, I'm saying, listen, I don't know, Pittsburgh or look, the Vikings just signed Stephon Gilmore off the street. Teams are hurting for corner, and Miami's deep at corner. Now, yeah, everybody could get hurt and we're like, oh, we're screwed, but you're going to be screwed anyway at that point. So,
well, if he gets hurt, we just go sign X.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. I'm sure he'll come back here for $5 million.
But the other,
maybe if he's doing nothing.
No.
That's it. If he's a guy that's only going to get, say, 300 snaps, 400 snaps for you, trade him to a team where he's going to get 700 snaps and get a sixth-round pick, get a fifth-round pick, get something for him.
That's the whole thing that we haven't discussed in this, though, that I really – like, just from a team-building perspective, right, it's a very, very good secondary the Dolphins have. But by secondary standards, they are – old. I mean, you're talking Poyer, Ramsey, and Fuller. All those guys are 29 and up at this point.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I didn't really think about it because Ramsey's still at his
younger depth in guys like Storm Duck or even Jalen Maitrey or Isaiah Johnson. Not to say that age is the end all be all, but if you're talking about guys at the end of the depth chart, you got to get young. You got to get younger.
That's fine. You can get younger, but if the goal is to win a Super Bowl, right? Let's watch this. The teams that have the most depth, proven depth, generally are the ones that end up making it the farthest, because we can't assume no injuries. It's impossible. Do you assume Teron Armstead is going to play 16 games? Not even in your wildest dreams can you say that. And so you can easily say something's going to happen to Jalen Ramsey somewhere down the line. Something has already happened to Jordan Poyer. He has to playing with a club.
How did Nick Needham get his proven? He's shown it to us. How did that originally happen to us?
When he was healthy, man.
Yeah, somebody got hurt and Nick Needham had to step in and get a shot.
Right.
And that's the only way you're going to give meaningful snaps to the guys, to the like of Bonner and Campbell and guys like that.
When you are pushing for a Super Bowl, you don't dump proven depth for guys that may or may not be giving you fool's gold against third or fourth string players in the preseason.
I'm disagreeing with you, Lewis.
She also has to go by what happens in camp too. And so you look at it like this. All right, Nick Needham is going to give you more than what somebody like, say, Isaiah Johnson is going to give you. Isaiah Johnson's also like a 6'3 corner. He was playing really well in this game. He's played really well this preseason. So you're like, do I put that guy on the waiver wire and risk getting him poached? Or do I move a guy like Needham? And if I have to play this guy, I'm just going to live with it and roll with the punches. So I get your point about wanting to keep everybody there. But at the same time, it's just as likely he's going to sit the bench and only play 250 to 300 snaps this year when he could be playing for somebody else, getting more snaps, which is benefit to him.
Okay, so but are you doing it from the perspective of doing a favor to Needham or for helping the Dolphins?
Well, I would take a pick back. I mean, that's a pick that you could use for something.
You got a six?
You might get a Come six. On. It's something.
What did Needham cost? What was Needham's
job? Wasn't he an undrafted free agent?
Exactly. If you get a six,
that's not the point. That's not the point. Listen, think about it this way. You want something for Needham? Let him play out his contract. If you really don't want him next year, let him sign with someone else. And maybe we get something out of the compensatory formula for him. Maybe we get a fifth out of him.
Yeah,
you won't get anything for that.
Sure, you will. Somebody signs him.
Here's the thing.
That's the mystery box. It's like, I can get a boat.
That's the mystery box. I like
that. It may even be a boat.
It's not a six round pick. It's not a boat.
It doesn't matter. It's the fact that you let him walk, you may get nothing. You definitely get a six round pick now.
You know what a six round pick was once upon a time? Tom Brady.
Oh, no. Eric, come on. Come on.
Lewis, I want you to think about something, though. And you know that I've said this before, and I'll continue to say it, but more I've said it under a GM's perspective, and I'm going to continue to say it under a GM's perspective. When coaches and GMs get to their team to a certain point, and they didn't get that to that point by simply loading up on a whole bunch of dudes for a 1 year, all in, take it or leave it, we're all in and we're going to blow it up like Florida Marlins style, you know what I mean? Back in the 90s kind of thing. When they get there through a process that they've been building on for years and years and years and years, they don't change that process because their prospects for a Super Bowl look really good this year. And when I say that, I mean they got here by giving dudes, young dudes, undrafted free agents, real low draft pick guys that kind of had to be developed and slow the Robert Joneses of the world, the Elijah Campbells of the world that we're starting to see. They went through a certain process to get those guys where they are. And they're not going to suddenly switch it now because of the few extra snaps that Needham might give them over the promising younger guy that's right behind them that they could be giving those snaps to in 25 and 26 because now that guy's developed it where we can play that guy and he's cheap because we can't pay everybody multi-million dollar contracts. That's how NFL rosters are designed. They're not going away from that process because they think, oh, this is the year we think we're going to win the Super Bowl. They're trying to be competitive every single year. Greer is doing contracts with that process in mind. But McDaniel and the coaching staff are coaching players with that same process in mind as one big kind of cohesive unit, a yin and yang of Greer and McDaniel and what they're doing with the roster last year, this year, next year, and beyond. And that's why, the only reason why, really, you keep a younger guy that isn't as proven over Needham, even though it feels like this is the year we got to have everybody as much experience as we can that deep in the roster. And like Duke said there, And if you end up playing a guy more than you thought you were going to have to play a guy, yeah, you take your chances on that, because that's just the NFL. When you start sifting around picks or a roster spot 53 through like 40, it's just kind of how it works.
Or you just sign Eli Apple off the street.
Oh god,
yeah, that went well.
I'd rather sign X.
Okay, are you? I think now Duke's making my case for Needham. If that's the case, man. Okay.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. I'd rather have Needham. Now that's the honest truth from what we saw last year. Oh, I'd much rather have Needham. That's for sure.
It's like Eli Apple. Give me a break, man. All I'm going to say is that it'll be easier to stash young guys on the practice squad than it would be to stash someone like Needham. Because,
yeah,
because the reason is because for all the talk we have about Miami's young guys and how much we love them, there are other teams that we're not even paying attention to that have their own young guys that are impressing more than they thought. So they're not just chomping at the bit waiting for Storm Duck to come loose so they can immediately
they're also
him.
Not wait. Can you tell me that any casual football fan who is not a Dolphins fan even knows who the fuck Nick Needham is? I would bet
right
you
so
could ask
who, so
10,000 casual NFL fans, and if they're not a Dolphins fan, they have no clue who that dude is. So I think you might be blowing him up, maybe we all are,
what
a bit more probably. We've spent enough time on DB number 11, more time than we should. Maybe we should in our last negative 6 minutes talk about anything else. How's that sound? I think we beat this to death.
My last point, if we really think that he's on the roster bubble, ain't no team on earth that's going to give Miami a 6th or even a 7th to go get him. For him.
I don't know if it matters.
Yeah, they will. Because if I want Nick Needham on my team because my cornerback room is just awful, and I'm like, well, if he gets the free agency and
then you'll still be the only team with cornerback troubles.
No, there will be other teams. So I'm like, well, maybe he doesn't want to go play for my team because whatever reason. But I can guarantee I'd get him for a 6th-round pick. I'm sending a 6th-round pick.
I don't know. All right.
You know, the other thing, just one last point here. You touched on nepotism. It is Anthony Weaver's first year. This is his first time seeing all these guys.
Yeah, but Mike McDaniel's there, and he's known Needham for a while.
Is Nick Needham Anthony Weaver's son? Because that's what nepotism means there, Lewis. I think you're a little confused on what that term means.
I mean, you understand what it is. It's like you get favorite, you get special treatment.
It's about players you trust. Hence, why Craig Kraft is here still year three, and not that he wasn't having one hell of a camp and he did so good in preseason. Clearly, he was increasing and getting better, but it is part of why they keep him around, because they trust them. They trust them to do some of the things. So what you're talking about really is trust, Lewis, and there's something to be said for that. It doesn't mean that Needham gets cut. I mean, they might find a way to make this all work. I mean, you don't know, and take from some other spot. We don't know. I mean, we're going to find out, though.
All right. We're going to go ahead and call it. The third preseason game, we had our dress rehearsal. That's done. It's Tua was perfect. No surprise to everybody. He had threw a touchdown. Beautiful. Tua Craycraft, by the way. Like, as soon as he comes back, he's going to just fit right in real nice.
Dolphins 24, Bucks 13. There.
I gave you there score. You go. There's your prediction for the game. I, you know what, though? I'm not going to say 20. I'm saying they got to score like 18 points max. Like, these preseason games are so bad. It's so bad. Like, Mike White and Skylar Thompson can't move the football, bro. They just can't.
To be fair to Mike White also, he played the entire second half without a running back. So you couldn't run a regular offense.
That's
the defense
true.
Was teeing off on him. So
that's very fair, Duke. They didn't even have a running back, really.
And the guy they had
to put back there.
Yeah, and the dude was like 170 pounds.
Yeah, trying to block people.
Yeah, and they would run him to the outside. So, yeah, that wasn't going to happen.
And I played running back in Pee Wee. Well, now guess what? You're the guy.
Yeah, you're the running back now. Get in there, kid.
And hats off to Burton for doing that. He could have easily said, man, I don't know what I'm doing. I can't do that. But he went in there and did it. So, you know.
For all you know, they could have drawn straws, and he just happened to be the one who picked
the short one. It counts for something that you're willing to put your neck out like there when you're trying somehow, some way to make a squad. And you're willing to put your neck out there and go play a spot that you don't hardly know anything about because you just want to do what it takes to try and get a spot when it looks like you're not going to. And that's something to say about someone's character. So it didn't help the team much, but it was preseason. Who cares? It is something to say about his character. And I thought that was pretty cool that he did that and really didn't do terrible considering.
All right. All right, let's call it here, folks. Make sure that if you haven't already gone to jerseys305.com, you get 10%, excuse me, 10% off when you use the promo code 5 on your next order. There's still comments coming in on the chat. Listen, we love you guys. We appreciate all the comments that come in during the show. We wish we could get some more of them, but we do got to make sure that we try to keep it around an hour.
That Nick Needham hot talk got people all fired up.
I did, man. Between Nick Needham and
there are fan favorites. Being a fan, Nick Needham is a fan favorite. He is an underdog story that came true, and you got to admire him at least for that much. And that's why so many people like him.
Who is this rule about an hour? What is going on here, man? I'm here to talk Dolphins all night, man. Come on, look, Duke, you ain't got nothing going on tonight, right?
We can have another show later on the week, maybe.
Is it Holly Lewis? Tell me.
No.
Don't make her an enemy. She came up with our little logo in the top right there.
Oh Lord, have mercy.
We love Holly. Now, come on now, Holly.
Do not slander my wife, sir. Okay.
Your all wife? Right. You're married?
We will be. Anyway.
Gotcha. All right, man. I'm just messing with you, man.
All right.
I'm just screwing around.
I know. We're done. Thank you all so much for joining us. Maybe we'll do some regular Finns Nation stuff. I can record stuff at work. I'll just drag somebody kicking and screaming during my lunch break, and we'll talk about it. We will see you all next week. Make sure you tune in to Pulse of Finns Nation next week, and it's going to be on the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast feed. Also, onlyfinns.gg. Discord.gg/onlyfinns. $3 a month. Best Dolphins news out there. We'll see you next week.